Blog Talk Radio.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. This is Mary G., your Abundant Knowledge host, and our speaker today is an overcomer. He is a Gulf War Army veteran, 4 times track and field All-American, and a 2 times Olympic trials qualifier who suffered a sports career-ending injury, which resulted in the amputation of his left leg. Yet, despite a devastating setback, he hurdled his adversity and won the long jump silver medal in Sydney, Australia. John Register, good afternoon. Welcome to the show.
Good afternoon. I am honored to be here. Thanks so much.
Well, first of all, I want to thank you for your service. We just celebrated the independence of the USA, and you served, and my hat is off to you, sir.
Oh, yeah. You know what? It's great to serve. It's great also to be back, but it's also great to have wonderful Americans, you know, saying how proud they are of our men and women who are still on the battlefield and still fighting for the freedoms which we so much enjoy in our country.
And we take them for granted quite often.
Yeah,
definitely,
I think many times we do.
Definitely an inspiration talking to you today. I would love for you to share your interesting story of how you handled the trauma that you encountered, if you wouldn't mind. Would you share that with us?
Yeah, of course. I was an All-American track and field athlete from the University of Arkansas. Go Hogs, go Razorbacks. And if you know anything about the Razorback dynasty, we won 42 national championships underneath the leadership of John McDonald, and I happened to be on one of those, four of those teams that in the early 80s, mid-80s, to win those national championships. And after I finished running, I decided that I didn't want to go into the workforce right away. So I said, how can I continue to run? I had just gotten a degree in communications. And I saw that the Army had a program called the Army's World Class Athlete Program, which allowed a soldier athlete to train 3 to 4 years prior to the next Olympic or Pan American Games. And so I said, well, let me try that. And I wound up going after graduating, enlisting actually in the United States Army, and made the World Class Athlete Program. But as you know, as you said earlier, and I think in the introduction, Saddam Hussein started rearing his head up, and instead of going to the Army's world-class athlete program, I was diverted and situated with a field artillery unit out of Fort Sill, Oklahoma, 6 to 27th Field Artillery, MLRS, Multiple Launch Rocket Systems, and went to the Gulf War for about 7 months and played in the sandbox. And after coming back, I really didn't have a lot of rhythm left in my legs to run the 110-meter high hurdles, which was one of my specialty events. And as I was struggling with that, I had a coach. He decided to change my event from that to the 400-meter hurdles one time around the track. And I started taking to that like a duck to water. I just was having a great time running it. One lap around the track was an amazing race, and the race was already laid out for me. And I wound up finishing 17th in the Olympic trials in 1992 down in New Orleans. So I said, well, if I can do that, let me try to make it to the 96 games. And I wound up getting as high as 8th in the country as the 8th fastest hurdler in our country. So I really had a great shot at making the team. But on May 17, 1994, when I was training with the Army program in Hayes, Kansas, I went across a hurdle and I dislocated my left knee. And that dislocation caused a blockage of the popliteal artery behind the kneecap. And because of the time of point of injury to the time where I actually underwent my first surgery was so long, I wound up having an amputation to my left leg. So, of course, that was just devastating. Going from
physically
the 8th fastest
hurdler.
Physically and mentally. I was just in a mess for a little while. And I know I came through my situation faster, but I think that's the reason I came through faster was because I had some great support around me. I had a strong faith, faith background. My wife and my son and my family were really strong supporters of me. And then I had the United States Army, all these friends that were coming out and really wrapping their arms around me, And any one of those, they were not allowing me to fail. So it was really my faith, my family, my friendships that equaled mm-hmm. my freedom, that equaled my liberation. And I think that's what we all need in life, right? We need something that when we are faced with a traumatic situation, whether it's physical or it's emotional, we need someone that maybe have been through it before or can walk with us and get us through that pain point faster.
Definitely. And the three
yeah,
F's,
so,
faith,
yeah,
family,
exactly
and
right.
friendship.
Right. And so I add the fourth one to equal our freedom because we all want
exactly.
to be liberated from that. So I wound up swimming for physical therapy, and 18 months later, instead of going to the Olympic Games as a 400-meter hurdler, I went as an African-American swimmer. You can get that one. And in my brain, we just didn't do that sport. So I wound up swimming the 100-meter freestyle as well as the 50-meter freestyle and anchored two of the relays, the 4x100 medley and the freestyle relay. So that
You're
was
definitely
interesting.
An all-around
you know, I
athlete.
Well, I don't know. I don't think I was much of a swimmer. I was more of a barge because I'm a pretty big guy. But I found passion again back into track and field. I saw athletes running with artificial limbs. And the story is, you know, I was watching closed-circuit television, and I saw these athletes, this guy named John Gravino, on the long jump runway with an above-the-knee amputation. As I'm watching this closed-circuit television, I see the camera pan out, and the audience is cheering and clapping for him. And as he makes his way down the long jump runway, he hits the takeoff board, leaps into the air, and at the apex, the height of his flight, his artificial leg flies off. And John
wow.
lands in the sand, and his artificial leg lands 3 feet up in front of him. The whole crowd goes dead silent. But
mm-hmm.
John, seizing the moment with all the eyes on him, turns back to that long jump official and says, "Hey, so where are you going to measure my jump from right here where my artificial leg landed up there?" And I
phenomenal.
Said, "Oh, man, that's a brilliant attitude to have." So that was really my catalyst to getting an artificial leg made for running.
Incredible. That's so inspiring, let me tell you, because we need more images in our minds of him and you.
Yeah.
Now, is
you know,
this the journey?
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. Go
I
ahead.
Said, you know, the story, it just keeps on, it goes, because I knew that if I had an artificial leg, I could keep my leg on and beat that guy in the long jump. I mean, one of my All-American
uh-huh.
honors was in the long jump at Arkansas. So I knew I could jump. I just had to figure out how to run and then jump off my other leg. And once I did that, I figured I could be a Paralympian again in the 2000 games. And I did come back with a silver medal from those games in the long jump and set the American record in the process. So that's really kind of the whole story of from All-American to having this devastating injury, not, you know, being one of 70% of those that are not injured in theater or in the Gulf War or in type of war, but actually outside the military personnel, and then coming back and winning a silver medal in the long jump in Sydney, Australia.
Definitely. Our hats go off to you. That is so inspiring because we set limitations to ourselves. And, you know, when we hear stories like yours, it's phenomenal. It's the way that, you know, we shouldn't limit ourselves because the potential
right.
is there. Now, is this journey how your business Inspired Communications International began?
Yeah, so part of it, you know, it's really a parallel track. So as I'm getting out of the military and separating from service, there's this total Army involvement in recruiting as I was a sports specialist and helping other athletes get their Olympic dreams coming true with inside the military. The military's world-class athlete program, the Army's world-class athlete program. And I started taking athletes down on these TARE missions, Total Army Involvement in Recruiting, TARE, to high schools where recruiters were trying to get troops in boots. And they would do a program where the athletes would talk about their journey as an athlete as well as a military service member to inspire the kids to join up. And I would be the MC, and I would help them with a poem or some type of a humor story or a joke in between the acts. So I went, after I did that about three or four times, the recruiters started calling my office and saying, hey, the principals are saying, who's the one-legged guy that was down there? Because our kids can't stop talking about it. And I said, well, that was me. Well, they want him back. And so then they said, and how much can you come back? I said, yes, of course I'll come back. I said, well, how much do you charge to do that? And then I had a long pause on the phone and said, let me get back to you on that. Because at that point, I never knew that there was even a business on professional speaking. And mm-hmm. so I did some digging, came around, and wound up saying, well, if I'm going to be a professional speaker, I need a message and a story to craft to tell these young kids of, if they're listening, let me give them a message to actually listen to. So that's when I began to help school administrators to have me say positive, affirmative messages and encourage the kids to buckle down in their studies because they had such a bright future ahead of them. And, you know, sometimes we have things that we want to say to someone else. We can't say it to them because we're just too close, and they hear it from us all the time. We just need to bring in somebody else to say it for us or say it a little bit differently so that they can hear it. And now, you know, it's kind of exploded from there because that was my first big kind of opportunity was with the American Plastics Council, and they had me come on as their spokesperson. And, you know, then I was just in all these different media markets, and people began to pick up on the story. And so through word of mouth, the business has really kind of grown.
And you are also involved with the military, aren't you?
Yeah, so I have with my – I work now out of the Army's Morale, Welfare, and Recreation, and I work with United States Olympic Committee, and I've developed several programs here, one of which was the Olympic Committee's Paralympic Military Sport Program. Now, Paralympics are for athletes with physical disabilities and visual impairments for the most part. There are a few intellectual classifications inside, which is what we call our 20 class, more intellectual disabilities. But mostly you're going to see a delineation between, or people will confuse Paralympics with Special Olympics, two great organizations, but two very different missions and two very different ways of how they execute upon the mission. The word Paralympic is derived from the Greek word parallel. So it's parallel to what? It's parallel to the Olympic movement. So we have the Olympics and we have the Paralympics, and you'll see it paralleled in a lot of different areas. So when the Olympic Games are coming to Rio de Janeiro next year, you will see the Paralympic Games coming 2 weeks after. So it's parallel by events. It's also parallel by the venues. And so all the venues that the Olympic athletes use, the Paralympic athletes use. The housing is the same as well. And we are one of four countries in the United States that actually operates the Olympics and the Paralympics under one governance structure. It is sports performance driven, while Special Olympics is participatory in nature. So think about that from kind of everyone gets a ribbon, everybody participates. We're not going to deny anybody an opportunity to performance-based, where it's gold, silver, bronze, and if you don't meet a qualifying standard, you will not participate or you will not compete. So that's the difference between Paralympics and Special Olympics for the audience that's listening. So I began crafting a program for injured military veterans, which is actually how Paralympics began in World War II. Out of World War II, Sir Ludwig Gutmann in England, Stoke Mandeville, England, began wheelchair sports for injured military vets to get those vets back to a healthy and active lifestyle. I just modeled after that a program that would do the same for injured service members coming back from Afghanistan and Iraq, and as they were injured, using sport as a tool and a mechanism for their rehabilitation. And it's grown tremendously. We've had like about 20 to 30 people, military veterans, on our Paralympic teams in some capacity. So it's really been phenomenal.
That's wonderful. And I know that on your website you also have a picture with Prince Harry. So it takes you around the world with your speaking and your duties too.
Yeah, and that's an interesting, you know, story, because he is really engaged with the military veterans from the UK. And we do a lot of sharing between the United States and the United Kingdom. And one of the things that we shared was how we built the military sport program. So I did some sessions at Loughborough University on how we built our sports programs before the 2012 Paralympic Games, as well as Headley Court, where that's kind of like our Walter Reed or Brookhaven Medical Center in the United States. Mm-hmm. Headley Court is the equivalent over in the UK. So I did some briefings to their staff on how we were doing this and how to use the sports model and bringing in Stoke Mandeville and Sir Ludwig Gutmann to remind them that they were the ones that actually started all of this. And they took off with it. And Prince Harry and the Princess Diana Foundation really gravitated to the concept. So he came over and put eyeballs on it and in hopes of beginning his own games. And he did it. He was very successful with it. And last year they had the Invictus Games. It'll be in their second year now, coming up, I think it's in August of this year. Invictus Games will be in London, England.
And that's, it's incredible how one trauma happening to you develops into, reaching out to so many individuals that really need it. Now, I know that your speaking has taken off because you're a terrific speaker. Now, what type of companies do you speak to?
So, that's a hard question for me to answer, and here's why. It's because I really don't speak to a specific company, right? So it's not like just I've spoken to BT, I've spoken to AXA Advisors, to other major pharmaceutical industries, to hospitals, to military units and commands. And so it's kind of all over the map, right? So if you just do a scattergraph, it's just like, where does this guy land? And it really comes down to, when I began to think about it, it comes down to two groups that really resonate with the message I provide in either speaking or training for those groups. And the first group really has to do with people who are experiencing some type of a pain point and want to move past it faster. So a group that maybe didn't hit the numbers in a sales team, and they need to get re-energized, that they actually matter and that they're and what they're doing actually matters. So I have an inspirational model that helps walk them through the process of their value, the value to their customers, and the value of their products to their customers. So that helps them understand that, it's what one person said from Boehringer Ingelheim Pharmaceuticals. She said to me, you help our sales staff get through the no's. You help them press through the no, and that's invaluable for us. So that's one aspect. But then you have the other people who are saying, well, I'm doing great. And the message that I have for them with inside of the Olympic movement of Fitius, Altius, Fortius is swifter, higher, stronger. And if you notice those words, those Latin words are not written in their superlative form. It's not swiftest, highest, or strongest. Because you can be the best today, but I guarantee you somebody's gaining on you. Somebody's trying to knock you off of that podium. This is, Paralympic or Olympic-type sport again. You want to be in that very narrow window of what do I need to do to stay and sustain being on top? And so we have messages that are crafted around that and exercises and activities of interactive learning that really drill it in. And I always say, very matter-of-factly up front, I do not know the industry as well as the people who are there that I'm speaking for. So I believe it's crucial to pull that information as they are thinking about it and writing things down. It's crucial to get that feedback from them to let them get their own solutions, because every single one of the groups that I've spoken for, when there's been a problem and they need a solution, it's always been in the room. They've always found it within inside of that group. They just needed some way to unlock it, to get it out. Mm-hmm. So I know I might know 10% about the organization. I hear speakers say they know 50% every time they go in, and I just like, that is a lot of work. to really know that deep, because I just don't see how I can know the culture. Now, I do things to help me, and I think this is why companies continue to hire me back, is because I do my homework so well that people feel I'm in their mailbox. But I do tell them, it's only because of what you reveal to me. If you reveal it to me, I'm going to get to know your culture a little bit. And I do want to speak to those employees that are struggling, as well as the ones that are knocking out of the park. and I will
sure.
pick up the phone and get on with them, and I will do surprise visits and get the pulse, the water cooler talk of what's going on in that company. And so now when I'm on either stage as a keynote or we're doing a training session, we're able to pull from the things that I've heard, and I can talk in their vernacular, because every company has a culture. They have a vernacular in how they speak. And I think that's why people come up afterwards and say, I just thought you were just like this motivational guy. And years later, they'll come up, I still remember that story you told us. I still implement some of the things that you gave to us. And to me, that's, I'm a teacher by trade, you know. So for me to learn something, teach it to someone else is great, but my real reward comes from those actually taking steps and implementing what they've heard that changes their life for the positive. That's where I get my, you know, I say, man, that's phenomenal. I celebrate your success. That's my passion.
That's great, because you have a unique way of looking at moving forward from trauma. So that's part of how you get people to talk to you. Would you elaborate on that?
Sure, yeah, thanks for asking. The way I look at post-traumatic stress, as we call it in the military, we hear that name a lot, focuses us on the pain point event. And so a lot of our military injured service members or people that have had trauma in Paralympic sport, they are doing so much more than what they ever did before they had their injury. And you hear it all the time. They'll say things like, I'm doing more with one leg than I ever did with two. I'm doing more and seeing more without my vision than I ever saw with my vision. So you hear the growth that they've had from that experience. And that growth really is something that launches them into their next normal, their next new normal phase of life. So I don't look at it as a post-traumatic stress. I look at it from a PTG, the post-traumatic growth, the growing from your trauma to where you are now and where you can be. Now, that doesn't mean that you forget about the post-traumatic stress that you had. It's you will remember that from time to time, whether it's an emotional or intellectual or physical trauma that you had. For example, with me, it can be 3 nights ago I had extreme phantom pains in my leg. And that's because my body was remembering the injury. And all of a sudden my leg started going crazy again, and it kept me up all night long. But the injury that I had those years ago back to May 17, 1994, I'm not there any longer. I have grown from that space. The problem lies with us as if we have that pain point memory again, and it actually takes us back there and we get stuck there. So I focus on the post-traumatic growth. What am I doing now? How am I reinventing myself? How am I creating my new normal now to create those new realities, those new opportunities? And so I have a whole keynote that's crafted around creating life's new normal. It's all about the post-traumatic growth. So that's, you know, the inspirational model that I talked about earlier fits kind of into that. Because once we see something happening and we see that a person is doing something, then we ourselves can actually move forward too. So you have for example, you have a doctor that tells an amputee, you'll never run again. You're going to, let alone, you know, walk. It's going to be difficult for you. And the person goes out all depressed, the amputee. And then they look at the Paralympic sports and they see an individual running, you know, under 11 seconds in a 100-meter dash with only one leg or missing two legs, right? And they're like, oh, my gosh, that can happen, and that is amazing. And so we go from this whole this thing of I can't that we've been told to seeing something of a validation, which blows the other model out the water, and we say, well, I can. Let me see if I can actually put steps and action steps to that to create my new normal in that space. It might not be Paralympic sport. Maybe you were a pianist, or maybe you were cooking. You like to cook, or you like to fish with your family. It causes you to move and act into the space that you once were in and do it even better. But the third growth is this, the person that tells you from I can't to, oh, wow, I know I can do that. The third growth is to the level of the post-traumatic growth says that this space, this new space I'm in, of course I should be here. Of course I should be running a 100-meter dash in under 11 seconds with one leg. because I'm just who I am. Nothing really has changed about me except for I'm missing this limb, I'm in this wheelchair, I don't have vision, but my brain capacity is still there. So therefore, I can do whatever I set my mind to, just as I could before. The stigma comes in, and what we have to overcome, the adversity we have to overcome, when I talk about hurdling adversity, is the stigma that other people place on us. It's their fears of what they think they can or cannot do if they were in our shoes. And we have
taking
to overcome.
Taking away that negativity.
Exactly right. And so, or the fear of what you're capable of doing. And if that person believes the rhetoric that's coming into their head, they will never advance forward or have to find other people to get it over. So the inspirational model says inspiration leads to motivation. Motivation then in turn causes actions. Actions lead us to results. And results either re-inspire us or allow someone else that's watching the process to catch the vision. So that's the model I flip on companies. And when I go in and I talk about that to these major companies, they kind of give me this kind of, you know, one of the Rock, Dwayne Johnson, puts the eyebrow up, you know. They're like, what?
Yeah.
And so I flip it on them, and I say it. A brilliant guy from Deloitte told me this. He said, you got something that's really good here. And you know these Deloitte guys, they're all about the numbers and figures. You have something that's really good. And he said, but you got to flip it because you can't go from the inspiration side. I said, what do you mean? So he says, tell them what you're doing for them, the outcome, and then go back and get the inspiration. So he says, tell them like this. He says, if you cannot have your employees articulate your message, your values, your vision from the top level all the way down to the person that's opening up that door, you have growth to do. You have not fully inspired the team. And so whether or not you think that you're great or good or brilliant, if you can't do that and you go in, and I go into a store and you can't, that person that's opened the door cannot articulate the vision to me, you got some work to do. And you can be better than you can be better tomorrow than you actually are today. Citius, Altius,
wow.
Fortius, swifter, higher, stronger. And so that's how I frame it. And it works because I do it in my own life. It's personal, and it's truthful.
And we
work together.
You're walking the talk, definitely.
Exactly right. Yeah, that's exactly it. So it's authentic, and that's why it's so believable, because it's just who I am.
And I'm so excited because you have a special gift for our audience, and I would love for you to tell us what you're giving and how they can get it.
Oh, yeah. Thanks. Yeah, I would love to share it. It's called a 5 Key Indicators for Post-Traumatic Growth. It's what, you know, what we look at as some indicators to know that we're on the track or how we might be able to do it. Now, this is not post-traumatic stress, remember, because we have those indicators and loss, and we talk about loss and the 7 steps of the grieving process and all that. This is after that happens. What are the growth key indicators? So I want to give that to you. You can find that on my website at johnregister.com/giveaway. And if you do that, it'll just ask you for your first name, your last name, email address, and it'll come right to you. We tested it last night, and it's working. So go get it. It's freebie. Check it out. Let me know what you think about it. And if you have something else that you think that I've missed, because, you know, everybody has a blind spot, so tell me what I've missed on it and let me know. Just shoot me a note back as you do that. I'd love to hear from you.
Now, ways that people can connect with you. How can we find you?
Well, I'm all over the place. my website is johnregister.com. Take a look around it. There's a great photo gallery of some of the places and the phenomenal people that I've met and been honored to be with. And then there's my YouTube page, which we do some updates. I do an Inspired 60 three times a week, which is 60 seconds of inspiration to jumpstart your day any time of the day. That's Johnny Reg 2000, Johnny Reg 2000. That's my YouTube page. And then you can get me on Twitter and Facebook at all of them are JF Register. So Twitter is at JF Register, Instagram JF Register. Facebook page is JF Register. And I have all those out there. So you can find me all over the place, all my handles, and I'd love to hear from you. Connect to the tribe, Tribe Inspire.
That is phenomenal. I appreciate you so much, John. And it's been a pleasure having you on the show. Of course, the time has flown, and we're coming to a close. But again, thank you for your time and all the wonderful things that you have shared with us today. And audience, we'll see you on the call again next month. Stay tuned. Thank you so much. And John, God bless you.
God bless you too. Thank you.
Take care. Bye, everybody.
Bye-bye.